Well, how are you? It's Johnny. I'm your host. I just got in from Washington D.C. I played there last night with Skyrocket. We had a great time. We played at this place, the Warner, and you know, we just played a couple of sets. It's kind of nice, you know. You go travel all the way out there, and you know, stressed out a little bit with the sound before the show. It was kind of up to the wire, like right when we, you know, they're plugging in the last thing, right as we're starting the first song. But overall, a great success, and everyone had a good time. So that was great. And it was for a benefit that was a really good cause. I'm still not exactly sure what it is, but I know that it helps young people that are underprivileged learn more. So that's good. It's good to get to do that. And then we went out. It's always fun, you know, when you're out on the road. You know, we've been in this band for a long time. We're all older. We don't really always hang out after shows and stuff. But it's nice when you're out of town like that. We all go out together and have a drink at a pub, you know, especially when the gig ends early. Ended at like 10. So it was relaxing. Evening, having some cocktails and then heading back to the hotel. And anyway, I got up yesterday. I went running around the White House. We were staying close enough there where I could just run down there and went by the old executive office building and you know, the National Mall and stuff. Saw some of the buildings, and it was great. It was fantastic. It had been raining all morning, so it was kind of cool. And yeah, that's a pretty exciting trip. And then I came back, and I met the nice people on the plane. Now I'm here talking to you guys. So that was my midweek trip. Now I'm getting ready to go to Houston and play there Saturday night for a thing with Skyrocket. Before we get into this interview, how about a word from our sponsor? Today's show is brought to you by PrettyRiot.com. PrettyRiot.com is a blog that caters to music, art, fashion, and almost anything independent. Naturally drawn to the unbeaten path, Pretty Riot's goal is to shine some light on all the badass stuff you have to search for. They're in love with art and artists of all types, so they created this site as a platform to show these things to the world. You should definitely be reading PrettyRiot.com. PrettyRiot.com. All right. My guest today is the man behind Oh Lookout, J.P. Furtner. Now, he came to me via a friend of mine here in town who's a publicist, Ryan Kano. And anyway, I got into his album, Orchestrated Fuzz. I turned it on and I flipped out. He was a guy that sounded like maybe he had listened to the same kind of stuff I did and kind of got into recording the same way I did in four-track world, in the house, using weird shit and being all lo-fi. In fact, I would go so far as to call this guy a lo-fi Jedi. That's right. He's a lo-fi Jedi. So JP came by. I'm glad he came by. Got to meet him. He's a nice guy. We're into the same kind of music, so we had a great conversation. And I found out where he was coming from. He's from right here in Austin, under my nose. He's been in bands before, Built by Snow. We might have done some shows together, we think. We're not sure. But anyway, JP came by last week, and we got a chance to sit down and talk. And he's a great guy. A great guy. I love talking to him. I love his music. So I guess without any pause, here's Oh Lookout, J.P. Furtner.
Oh,
Orchestrated Fuzz.
Yeah.
Oh, that was a bad cutout, wasn't it?
Oh, it's
my
just...
fade wasn't pro.
It was
try
pretty
to keep it all very pro.
No, it was close to pro. It started to fade and then it just cut off. But that's the way a lot of the songs that I do kind of end. They always just sort of cut off. So
right. Oh, look out.
Oh, look out.
Is that's the name right. of the what it was, you call this a project more than a band, cuz it's just you.
Yeah,
JP.
It is just me. It wasn't about a year ago, I got with some friends and we started playing live with the band. And even though I had just recorded everything at home, I wanted to bring it live. So it was a band for about 6 months, and then it's back to just me again doing it at home. So recording, and I'm thinking about playing live with maybe like a kick drum setup and a guitar and maybe a keyboard next to me.
Oh, yeah, I got the suitcase kick drum.
Oh!
A guy made me.
Oh, dang, that's a real suitcase, too.
Yeah, it's a real suitcase.
Does it boom pretty hard, I guess? Do you have to mic it up to hear the... Nice.
My friend, the drummer Joe Hummel, told me that I should get a fuzzy beater for it.
Okay.
Also, my friend Evan Howard told me the same thing.
Okay. That's awesome. That's light. I want
light.
One of those now.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Can you just put it up to any suitcase?
A friend of mine had a thing made for it, and he put a little piece of metal that's screwed in real tight. So then you hook the drum kick drum pedal to it.
Nice.
This is going to be really interesting for people that can't see it.
Yeah, yeah. They're going to have to look up some sort of suitcase pedal. I mean, it just looks like a 2 foot tall blue suitcase with a pedal.
So this is the Orchestrated Fuzz.
Mm-hmm. It's like a home recorded CD. It's about 20 minutes long, but I tend to write short songs. So.
You write short songs. Yeah. I write short songs too.
Yeah, yeah.
But not like that short all the time.
Yeah.
They're pretty short. There's a lot under 2 minutes.
Yeah, yeah.
You have a record with 10 songs that's only 19 minutes long.
Yeah, they've kind of been like that. The last one was about 24. The one before that was 22. So they're getting shorter lately too. But I don't know. I don't like to do...
I have a feeling that your next album is going to be a backlash. It's going to be like an 8-minute drum solo in the middle of every song.
I'm thinking I'm going to get a little bit longer again. But I stopped doing third choruses. Sometimes I'll do one chorus. I don't do a lot of second verses. Sometimes it's more of like an intro and then a verse and sort of a bridge, then maybe an outro. Some of them are just skipping the chorus. Some of them... I don't know. I got kind of bored with just repeating the second verse.
It's still
verse.
Good, though. I mean, it's Thank still you. Very pop, you know? You can tell you're like a... are you like a home recording pop guy? I mean, are you part of like this movement where guys by themselves do these things?
Yeah, I mean, I'd like to be. I've always liked music like that. The people who
you like
do.
A Jason Faulkner.
Yeah, I'm Daniel Johnston. Daniel Johnston. R. Stevie Moore, you know. Have you ever listened to R. Stevie Moore?
Nope.
I'm
going to check him out.
You are Stephen Moore. But Moore. He has about 400 albums.
No way.
No joke. More than 400 he advertises. So it's kind of hard. But if you just start at the beginning.
Sounds like some old blues dude.
I
made over 400 albums.
It's like it's a guy who his dad was the bass player for like a bunch of these old Nashville sessions like Elvis and this.
What do you mean? His dad was Scotty Moore?
Yeah.
No, the guitar player.
The guitar player. Because Daniel.
Are you shitting me?
Yeah. No, that's him. His son is R. Stephen Moore.
I'm a huge Scotty Moore fan.
Yeah, well,
one of the best, man.
R. Stevie Moore is his son, and he started recording in the maybe the late 60s, early 70s, and since then he's just like albums every couple
months. Is he still making albums?
Yeah.
Does he do them at home?
Yeah.
And is really?
Yeah, still does them at home. He's big and bearded now.
See, like a McCartney's first solo record guy.
Yeah, yeah, McCartney's first solo. I mean, and all of
Inner Visions, you get into that? Stevie Wonder.
No, but I like
him still doing everything.
And I love Stevie Wonder. Yeah. I've never dove into the catalog that deep. But you know, definitely like the Paul McCartney stuff and all the Beatles stuff. I'm a huge nerd. Daniel Johnston, R. Stevie Moore, Chad Van Galen, you know, of Montreal does some of that. Which I haven't been into the more of the recent stuff of Montreal, but the earlier stuff, way into. He kind of does the same thing, home recording all by himself and calls it a name instead of his own name.
Right.
So.
I did a record like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was just looking you up a little bit there. What was that one called?
It's called Boy in a Box.
Yeah. Sweet.
Yeah.
Sweet. Yeah, I'm going to have to go download it. I was listening
I'll
to
give
some
you
tracks.
Copy of it.
Yeah, if I could. Yeah. I was just listening to it. It's awesome stuff.
I was thinking about having mugs made to give guests when they come to the show.
Nice. Yeah.
Maybe a mug with just maybe my face on it. Mug on a mug. My mug on your mug.
Nice.
My mug on your mug.
On a mug. On a mug and hand it out.
So this is your second album. The first record that you did with O Lookout, was that? It was all right.
I was thinking about when I titled it. I was going to name a band that a long time ago and just kind of think, all right, just keep
after
going.
After the Outkast?
That was one of them, yeah. But I like that Outkast song. Yeah. And then the other one is The End of Revolution and the Beatles.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh,
yeah, yeah.
And then, all
I just
right,
sang that.
All
I just right, sang that all... on Tuesday at John Lennon's birthday.
Nice. I saw that you were playing that. Yeah. Yeah.
I did that.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
What did you play? What are those?
Revolution and Run for Your Life.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
So sorry, go ahead. So
I get sidetracked if you talk about the Beatles.
I didn't hear that record. Is that record also a bunch of short songs?
It's short, but not as short. They're more formula to the typical pop, a little bit more in the verse, chorus, verse, bridge, chorus, end kind of style. It's cleaner, poppier, more just synth driven, hand clap, catchy pop songs. It's more like the last band that I was with was called Built by Snow, and okay. It's very just Cars, Devo inspired, that kind of stuff. Very just high energy.
You big Cars fan?
Yeah, yeah.
Me too.
I'm a mega Cars nerd. That was the first cassette tape I got as a kid. It was Cars, and it just sort of stuck in my brain, and I kind of listened to that forever.
So let's go back there. When you were you a kid? Where are you from?
Austin, right here.
Right here.
Yep.
Born and raised.
Born and raised South Austin. Moved to North Austin when I was.
Are you friends with Sean Crooks? He's a pop guy. What about Jody Percupal? Those guys had the Alice Rose.
Oh,
Jody
yeah,
just made
yeah.
a record like you where he played everything on it. He was on the show, yeah.
I forgot. Yeah, I remember the Alice Rose. And it's been so long since I've talked to these people because I used to play a bunch with Built by Snow, and then I haven't played as much live in the past couple of years, so I kind of lost touch with people.
Right.
But yeah, I remember the
But
Alice
I know those
Rose.
Guys were also from South Austin. I mean, they grew up in South Austin.
Okay,
you know?
Yeah. And I didn't meet him until Built by Snow. I remember meeting... I met... those guys for sure, Alice right. Rose, and I didn't know that they put out the album, or he put out a new album,
yeah,
I guess.
Maybe it's not out, maybe, I thought it was.
Okay.
Yeah, I think it is. Nice. Anyway, let's go back. So you're a kid, you grew up in South Austin. What do you have brothers and sisters?
I do, I have an older sister, it was just a year older, and then a younger sister who's 9 years younger, and grew up in South Austin, and then moved to North Austin, and then moved to Pflugerville, and then moved further out to Pflugerville, and that's where I am now, in a house out in Pflugerville.
So. Oh.
Yeah.
What?
Kind of out there.
What draws you to Pflugerville?
It was a lot cheaper to live, really. You know, and I've got a son. And another,
oh, you do?
I do. I have a son
look
who's
at you
almost look... three and another son on the way who is due in November.
Wow.
Yeah. The first son is named Charlie and the second one is Cameron. So
the one on his way is named Cameron.
Yep. Mm-hmm. About 5 weeks away till we have him.
5 weeks?
Yeah. And that Pflugerville is very nice for like families, like raising kids and stuff.
Yeah.
So that's the biggest thing I think that drew us out there was we could get a nice house that's a decent size, and the neighborhoods are very family friendly. The schools are great. So, you know, I guess more of being a dad than being a musician pushed me out to Pflugerville. So,
but there's no, I mean, you can be a musician.
Yeah, and I still
do. Butt. If you lived in your own butt, you could be a musician.
I sometimes live in my butt. So that's what I do.
So what do your parents do? What were they doing?
IBM. That's my dad did IBM. My mom just sort of stayed home. But
IBM, that's a lifelong job.
Yeah.
A lot of people don't leave that job.
No, he's been there.
Did he have one of those badass? I have a few friends that did IBM, a couple that still do that had these home jobs.
He has the home job now.
Now.
Back then he went, but now he's like in the almost ready to quit and retire stage. So,
yeah.
But he's home now, just kind of hanging out.
That's a cool job.
Yeah, he likes it. He was great. He doesn't mind it. He loves computers and all that stuff. So,
yeah.
Yeah, it's for him.
So your parents still together?
Mm-hmm.
So they were together the whole time?
Always together.
Normal kind of life?
Yeah.
Middle class?
Yeah, very middle class, normal upbringing.
No government cheese stories?
No. I had everything pretty good. Everything was good. We weren't rich at all, but we got by and we were happy. So nothing, right. no bad stuff really going on. And my mom's side of the family is very musical. So that's, I guess...
Okay, so that's where you... Was there music in the house?
A lot in the family. On her side of the family, everybody plays an instrument. One of the guys, my uncle, his name is Curtis Myers, and he invented the hamitar. I don't know if you've seen this thing. He's in Austin, too. Now he's in Spicewood. But he made this hamitar, and it's like two guitar necks tied together, and then like going out, and then pickups in the middle, and you can play it like a piano, and you can kind of play two guitars at once, one kind of playing a chord, like hammering it out, and the other one kind of playing a solo.
Really?
Or you can pick it up.
Or like bass lines, and then the other one's playing the chords or something? Like whatever you want to do? No.
Well, it's set up with a string that's like super long that you can go all the way across. So it's one guitar string that goes all the way across with a bar in the middle.
That is so weird.
Yeah, with like two different pickups. So you can play guitar, like one side doing chords and one side doing solos. Or you can pick it up and just sort of rock it. It's pretty wild. I know.
Gets high. Yeah, he definitely has to. Nobody comes up with some kind of shit like that without weed involved.
Yeah.
So he invented the hamitar.
Yeah.
Do you have one? Do you use one?
But those
have you ever used one on a recording?
No, I haven't. I need to get him to give me one. But those things are expensive because he prototyped these things. You know, they're
so
expensive.
Did someone make them?
He paid someone to really build these the right
way.
Maybe
a company or something?
Yeah. I think, I don't remember what company it was, but this was like late 80s, early 90s. And the stuff I remember him talking about was, I'm trying to talk to Van Halen to see if they can get in on this hamitar. But I guess it didn't work out.
Was that your imitation of him?
Yeah.
That was good.
Yeah,
I just noticed he went into a different character.
He's got the little deep voice, and he's...
Been working on my hamitar, got EVH looking at it, going to do some hammer-ons.
Exactly. He's pretty rad, and he still plays around town, and he's had plenty of bands and stuff, so I guess he's the most musical.
We need to get him on here.
Yeah, he's a great guy. He's fun. He's funny, too. So, yeah, he's a good guy.
Yeah. Well, we'll have to exchange info.
Yeah, I'll pass it along. Yeah. He'll come hang out.
Okay, so you had all that music, so when did you decide... Like, what was the first instrument that you played, and how did you come across it? Did you ask for it, or did someone push you to do something?
I did saxophone first, but that was like high school band stuff, or not even high school, middle school band, sixth grade. I want to do an instrument. Okay.
Right.
It was either trumpet or sax. I chose sax. So I did that for just 2 years in middle school, and then at that point, got into high school, and it was like time to get a guitar. So we sold the sax and went and got an acoustic guitar. And that was when I started writing. I didn't do a lot of learning, like going to school or going to like a guitar classes lessons.
Yeah.
I just sort of picked it up and messed around until it sounded right. And then bought a 4-track pretty much right away. And
so
just started recording. So it's really been since I was about 15, I started like home recording. It just, I have boxes of these cassette tapes that I made with 4-tracks, but I haven't, I didn't really get it together for a few years. It took me a while. I listened back to the recordings and there's cool stuff for like, you know, being a kid recording on a 4-track, but
what was the 4-track? What was it?
A Tascam for a while, but I went through a couple of ones.
Like the straight up 4-to-1 with just the two inputs.
I had that one,
did you have the one with the mic on it?
No, I never had that one. But I had my own little Radio Shack mic I plugged in, and I know for a while I used, and I still have the Porta Studio MK2.
Yeah.
For the fours, and I still have that.
And it has a return to zero function.
Yeah.
I like a lot.
Yeah, it's awesome. I love it, and I even started messing around with that for this Orchestrated Fuzz album a little bit.
Cassette tape sounds. Yeah, that sound I miss, you don't hear it anymore.
Yeah, that was what got me into it. I was listening to so much Daniel Johnston and like R. Stevie Moore and these kind of, you know, I guess more bedroom lo-fi recordings that I thought I want it to sound like that. It's just what I'm into at the moment, so I want to try to do it. And it's honestly harder when you have good gear to get that sound because you're so inclined to just go, well, it sounds great.
Yeah.
Like, how do I make it sound bad? I don't want it to sound this clean. I want it to...
That's the same problem. When I switched over to one of these, which I got like the 8-track one, which is down there in a box, but the machine, I'm referring to the machine that we're recording this podcast on, which is like a 16-track machine, Roland...
I had a lot similar to this, I had the 24-track one, that's awesome.
So anyway, trying to get rid of that, trying to get back to that sound of of like the ultra compressed. Do you end up using a lot of compression? I get that sound, there is that kind of like mid-range sound to your record.
You know, a lot of it was just dicking around, some with cassette tapes, like recording sounds onto a cassette. Like I had a little those little handheld cassette tape things with a little speaker on it, you know, like boxes.
Yeah.
I can't remember what they're called. Just put a cassette tape in and record.
Ghetto Blaster.
Well, and that, I also had a Ghetto Blaster also, like an old 2 8-inch.
So that's
speaker
how you started ghetto. Doing it.
Yeah. So
yeah,
some
that's
of
how
that,
I started too.
Yeah, yeah, that. Exactly. So started recording on some on cassette tapes and some on the cassette tape 4-tracker and then some on Pro Tools and then, you know, sort of.
But you're young then.
I'm
like, what year were you 15? What year was that? What was happening?
95 when I was 15.
Yeah. What was the landscape?
It was very much...
Middle... What were you into?
I was into Weezer. Okay. A big time Weezer fan. I was just getting into the Impossibles, who are friends of mine, a local band.
By this time you had the Cars cassette?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I had Cars.
What Cars?
I pretty much got all of them.
What was the first one?
But in this record. Was like Amazing. The mid 80s. That was when my dad gave me the Cars okay. cassette. Like he would come home from business trips, and he'd be every time he came home, he was like, "Here's the cassette tape. You get a Cars, or you get another Cars tape, or you get the golden sounds of the 50s or something." So he's trying to lay some good music on me at the time. So, and we'd listen to Beatles a little bit in the car.
That's cool.
He was cool. He was really cool, and he wasn't the musical one. In the family,
right? He's a fan.
Yeah, he laid down the good music. He also tried to drop some of the 80s country on me. Which,
what was that? What was
Alabama 80s and George Strait and stuff? That just didn't stick.
That stuff, it's not that cool as cool as the older stuff.
No,
it's weird.
It just hit me and rolled right off, and I just really like attached to the Cars and the Police and stuff like that. That was big in the 80s.
So, what was the stuff like that you were doing? Like the first four track shit that you did. What were you listening to then?
I was listening to a lot of Nirvana and Weezer.
Oh, okay.
But it just kind of, it was weird.
Weezer kind of has that sound. I mean, the guy from the Cars produced it, yeah, so it makes sense. You know?
Exactly.
It has that dry sound because you don't have a reverb thing on your four track and it all makes sense.
Yeah, exactly. So I was like, this would be easy to get, but I wasn't able to write songs like that. So it was coming out more. For some reason it was coming out soundtracky style. Like, because I wasn't confident as a singer at all, so...
Oh, right.
So I'd sing a little bit, but a lot of the stuff started turning into more like what you'd hear in a soundtrack, a horror movie or stuff that. Just kind of weird.
What kind of instruments did you have?
I had a guitar, and I had a keyboard.
You have anything, like a guy like this, like a Casio or
something? Yeah,
there's a... Plus, then once you get guitar pedals, then this can be anything, really.
Yeah, and that's what I used a lot was it was very similar to that. Like, it was a Yamaha, one of those, these drum sounds orchestra sounds. So I was using all those to, like, add on these layers. A little bit of guitar and a lot of these just drums and orchestra.
It's just funny how so many people have the same experience mm-hmm. without learning it from someone else.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I bet you and me and, like, other guys I know, like a guy I'm in a band with, Darren Murphy, well, he might have been more straight up music thing, but guys like, Jason Faulkner and guys mm-hmm. like this, guys that learn to write, play, and record at the same time.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Maybe it was just something that was going on earlier. I don't know. But, yeah, it does seem like... I see a lot more people like that now, but at the time I couldn't find people like that because I would have loved to like attach myself to people like that to form bands.
Well, Sean and Jody from Alice Rose were like, they were like that from the time that they were, I'm friends with Sean's dad. I'm Sean's godfather actually.
Uh-huh. Oh,
and,
wow.
And that was a totally Jerry Lewis move. I smacked the microphone. I'm trying to think of when those guys started doing the four track shit. I mean, it must have been when they were like 13 or 14. They started playing together.
Man, oh, that's awesome. Yeah. See, that's the I wish that I would have found something like that. And I had great friends to play with, but I never had people like that who were as into it as the recording and writing and all together. Like,
so what were you doing? You're at home, you're recording. Did you start playing with other people? Did you get in a band in high school? Did you have a band?
Yeah,
what did you do?
We were called the Rascals in high school. We didn't have internet, or we were just getting internet. So hard to search for other bands, and you find out there's a band called the Rascals. Kind of silly. But by then we were like, we're going for it. We're the Rascals and we're going to be amazing. But we were just, more just a sort of a punkish sounding band. We wanted to be like Nirvana and Weezer kind of rolled into one, and it just didn't really jive, but it really taught me a lot. And then from there we played for a few years, and then we played a few places downtown, but nothing serious. We weren't really that good, and then we pushed forward after that. Everybody moved away to college, or a couple of the guys did, so that's when I started really pushing myself at home to record and do like more solo stuff, I guess.
Right. Did you start singing? When did you put out your first record? What happened? Like, what did you do after high school? Did you go to college?
I went for like music stuff, for music recording, some music theory to ACC, but didn't graduate. I took all the music classes they had to offer, and that's when I stopped. As soon as I took all those, I was like, all right, I've learned everything I need. I'm done.
I went to a recording thing. And yeah. It didn't.
Did you
just
do...
like a year, I was just like, this isn't... I mean, plus it was like 1987.
Oh, wow. So do they have the full sale, like those big recording academies then? Or was this just more of a...
You know, they did. I think Full Sail was around then, but I went to the Houston Community College had a big...
recording program.
A huge recording studio. Nice. Like a full-blown 24-track and a full-blown 16-track with huge rooms and stuff and everything. I went there for a year and kind of just realized that when I got out, I was just going to have to intern behind everyone else at a studio. Yeah. And then I was like, I had way too much energy, way too much to say. And I could kind of be around studios at that time. And I realized that I talked too much to be like the engineer. I was going to get fired from everything I did. But, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Talking too much.
No, that makes perfect sense. Is everything you're saying there is like,
and I had a 4-track at home, and I feel like you know that's the school.
Yeah,
you know,
eventually you have
to do it yourself.
Yeah,
and the more limited capacity you have, like you have like one microphone, a 58 at best, if not like you know a 48 or a Radio Shack mic.
Yeah.
And you got to figure out how to make sounds that
you've heard
from other records.
Without reverbs and the cool effects and all the compression. You don't have a lot of
You learn
that
how to
stuff.
Move mics
until
away
it sounds
from
good.
Stuff to get,
Just keep messing around, keep recording until it sounds. Yeah, exactly. That was, everything you said is like exactly how I felt. Like, I don't need, like, I can intern or I can not get paid, but then even then I'm just working on stuff other people want me to, and I'd rather work on something I want to and
that's
learn
exactly
it.
How I was, and I just went back to my 4-track.
Yep. Exactly what I did.
Like in the fall of 88.
Yeah.
That's what I was doing. I was just in my room all the time. I was working at Whole Foods.
Just hammering away on a 4-track.
Fuck school.
Did you just have one mic or did you have a couple mics going?
I had one mic.
Man.
And I didn't have a bass at the time, so...
Did you slow the guitar down or did you do any tricks?
No, I would take my electric guitar and roll off all the... You know, put it on the darkest sounding pickup and roll off all the high end. And then,
I did that, too.
I just kind of do it like that.
Yeah, I did that and then I did the keyboard bass sometimes. But it always sounded cheesy. You know,
right.
You couldn't really...
I had a drum machine that I bought from... I had this... my aunt was married to this dude and his brother had committed suicide and his wife was selling off his music equipment. And I got his drum machine.
Was it the...
It was the HR-16.
The SR-16? The Alesis?
No. Not the SR. The first one. The
gray
one.
Oh, the one before that. Oh, yeah.
The very first one.
My first one was the SR-16.
Yeah,
I remember the gray one.
I had an SR-16 for a while.
Yeah, that was the best for a little while. Yeah, that's when I had it. Yeah, it was the best. It was like you couldn't get anything better than that SR-16.
Yeah.
It was killer.
So, this is so exciting. So then you went to school... Same kind of thing for me, like me, for a year, and then just realize you could do. And then what were you doing?
Then
were you living on your own? Were you living at home? Were you in Pflugerville?
I was on my own at this point. I had an apartment, and this was when I graduated in '98 and went to college in '99, and then by 2000 I had a job and I was on my own in an apartment, and I bought something like this. I got the Akai DPS-16 hard disk recorder, and was like, I'm going for it. So I bought that and I charged it and it took me 10 years to pay off, but I charged it.
I like that you just paid it off last year.
I swear, like that was the beginning of debt, you know, like you start buying all this gear and it takes you forever to realize you're not going to be able to pay for it. But so I bought that and I started recording on the Akai, on the hard disk recorder, and tried to really get serious about writing. And somewhere in there I kind of dicked around for about 2 or 3 years, just trying to learn to get really good at recording, and at least compared to where
I
was before.
I mean, it just takes days. Of just
doing it, just recording and messing around and learning all the little things that seem so obvious now, like not to add EQ but subtract EQ, like these little things that why does it sound so shrill? What's the deal? It's like all these little tips that. So, about the mid 2000s is when I guess I started getting real serious, and I started writing a lot of songs and I started getting comfortable in my voice, and I decided I'm going to do a band, but I'm scared to do a band. I'm kind of shy. I was very, like, at this point, just I'm in my room. I like to record in my room, and I had recorded all these songs, and I was like, I'm going to talk to my friend, and it's like, let's do a band, and we'll call it Built by Snow, which is what we talked about for forever. This was me and my best friend Jason, who is always by my side through all these bands. He's like always just helping me do whatever I needed to, helping me write lyrics and all this stuff. And just my best friend, still my best friend to this day. We're like, we'll call it Built by Snow, and we'll record. And I was like, well, we need it to look like there's a real band here, because it's kind of, it's just like me doing all this and you and it, two people doesn't look like a real band. We need to sell this. So it started by me telling my friends who I work with, I was like, well, who are a couple of my best friends at work? You and you, can you come take some pictures with me? Like, and
so you just got random people.
Well, they weren't random. What's funny is it's,
this, no, I mean, just like, they're not musicians.
Well,
they're not,
that's what's in the band. Weird is okay. they were. And I was so like gung ho on like, I just recording by myself and just not paying much attention. That I'm like, would you guys come and just take a picture with me and act like you're the band members? They're like, yeah. By
Did
the way,
they look cool.
Yeah. Like, by the way, I play bass and I play guitar. I'm like, whoopsh, whoopsh. All That's right, high fives. Yeah. High fives. Whoopsh, whoopsh. So they came over and they hung out and they helped me sing on a song and took these pictures. And I was like, well, then why are we faking it? Why don't you guys just be in the band?
Yeah, let's do it.
So they did. And then we got a drummer who worked with us as well. Like, we were all just right there.
What a great place to work.
Yeah, this is a TV station.
Austin.
Yeah, we work at a TV station.
Oh, yeah. What TV station you work at?
KI 42.
That's a good station.
Yeah, it's good. It's good.
Got, Judy Maggio.
Judy and Fred and Ron.
Judy's a big music fan.
She's great. And she's one of the nicest people you ever meet.
Nice person.
Yeah. Judy, Ron, like, they are so nice. Just great people.
You know who? I see her at John D. Graham shows.
Oh,
she loves John D. Graham.
Yeah, she's a huge music fan. She's always out. Her and her husband, super great. His name's Thad. Yeah,
he's a good guy.
Yeah, he's super great. Nice.
So what
people.
Do you do there? What's
I'm a director right now.
Director?
Yeah. Yeah. I started working there in 99 and 2000, right around there. And I started out running camera and prompter, and then worked my way up to master control, running all the commercials and stuff.
What a cool
and
job.
And tapes, and then learned a little audio, technical director, and now I'm mainly technical director, which I have this big, huge board in front of me for the newscast.
Do you have the thing?
Yeah,
the headphone with the mic.
Yeah, the headphone with the mic.
Like,
push all the buttons.
Camera one.
I say that sometimes. Most times I leave it up to the director, and I just sit there in front of the huge board, and every camera, graphic, videotape you see on the air is me pushing that button during a newscast. Like, psh, 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 all that stuff.
That's so cool.
That's a cool job. I kind of like it. It's been 12 or 13 years now that I've been there, so... Yeah, it's great. And great people. All the people who work there are super awesome. Like, they all pretty much became my best friends.
And you get benefits, which is the best part about, you know, in your dad
stuff.
So
it worked out. Well, I'm married also, and that's the best part. I have a great wife who has a great job. And she let me go part-time at the station a couple years ago when my son was born. So it became, all right, you can do music and watch the kid and then go to work part-time.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So I get more time for music now. She's great. Wow. So I still do that. I'm part-time.
And you're still married? You guys are happy?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's absolutely happy. Wild. Yeah, it's great.
Okay, so Built by Snow was not a band that was a bunch of dudes that did a bunch of cocaine and wrote songs.
No, I know. Everybody made the cocaine reference.
I mean, it's like, you know.
Like, so you guys are big cocaines.
Yeah.
Like, no, but...
Built by Snow.
We kind of thought, we were like, this is a cool name. It's like the Snowmen, but instead of saying the Snowmen, we're Built by Snow. You know, because everybody was a The band at the time.
Right,
There were so many The's. It was like, okay, this is getting ridiculous. It was just the pockets
and the knives and the strokes and the
doorknobs and the... Yeah, this is too much. So we're going to be built.
I called
by
myself
Snow.
The Johnny Gowdy at that time.
Oh, that's pretty good. That's a good take on it.
So then you guys, did you guys make records?
Yeah. So we made our first one in 2007, recorded at Music Lab, and we played it. We won a battle of the bands, which we had only been playing for about a year and a half, and we did a battle of the bands down at Red Eyed Fly, where every band seems to start most days, and we. Won the battle of the bands, and the prize was recording at Music Lab. So, so we took that. And
who was the guy recording you?
It was going to be Tim Guerin, but I think scheduling didn't work out.
Danny? Danny?
No, who was
the guy?
There was a guy, Gabe.
All right.
Who did it for a little. He had recorded the San Antonio Girl band, pretty hip.
Yeah, Girl in a Coma.
Girl in a Coma. He had just been recording them.
My girls.
Yeah, so there you go. Yeah, he had been recording them right before that. So we're like, oh, that'll be awesome. So he recorded the album for us, and we really just churned through it. It was more like a demo album. That was the first one in 2007. Learned a lot, and from that one, moved right into the next one, and we churned out songs pretty quick. And in 2009, we released our best album, which is called Mega, and it was 9 songs, like 22 minutes, something like that. But it was super poppy, super catchy. Yeah, yeah. And we, at that point, we got into South by Southwest. We played North by Northeast in Toronto. We did a little tour up there. Got a song licensed in a Google commercial. Licensed a song on Cartoon Network. Austin 360.
How did the Google? Did someone just call you one day? Like, it's hey, it's me, luck. Jim from Google.
It was weird.
Love the snow.
He was like, I'm directing a Google commercial, and it was already shot, and I was riding, he's in New York, and I was riding home on the subway, listening to Pandora, and we thought we were almost done with the video, and then your song came on, and it was called Something in 3D was our song, and it was probably one of our catchier songs, so it was instantly a hook, I guess, and it got him, and he was like, oh my God, this is the song we need to do for the commercial, I need to re-edit the whole thing, redo it, and it was for this big Google Maps promotion when that came out, the 3D maps.
Yeah, yeah.
So, like, all right.
Did you score some good bread?
Yeah, but you know,
like that. You sounded disappointed.
You know, well, everybody's. I guess the part of the
you
problem
didn't get
is
to quit the chaos.
No, no. You know, honestly, part of the problem. I think growing up, you assume that people are going to make so much, like, or pay you so much for things that you do. And we didn't have a manager; it was just us. You know, I was doing a lot of the work, and me and
you
Matt,
got a lawyer,
the other guy.
A guy?
No, no. Oh, wife is a paralegal, so she knows contracts. So it helps, and she has lawyer friends who now look at stuff that I do. So we have lawyer friends. But
sometimes it's good to get a guy like your own guy.
And it would have, well, if we would have negotiated, I know we could have got even more money. Yeah. But we got $2,000. Like I'm not like it could have been a lot more as Google, you know. But
you didn't get like a residual situation.
No, it was just straight up flat fee, and they had already shot and edited the whole video, so they were more like, we've already got one done, and the director had already told the people who were paying for the commercial, I need this, 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 this. And they said, okay, great, 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 great. He had already paid someone else to write a song, all that, and the video was done, and then he told them, no, I changed my mind. You've got to have this song.
Like, no more budget.
So they're like, well, we can give you this much. And he's like, you've got to let them just do it. So when Google called and talked to me, I was like, kind of expecting about that much, and that was what they called and said, and I was like, we'll take it, you know. I mean, it's, you know,
cool.
We're,
I mean, because, you know, it's substantial. Like, I had songs in a TV show this last year,
mm-hmm.
and like 3 or 4, and they did a straight up payout or whatever, you
mm-hmm.
know.
Yeah.
And they gotta pay your lawyer a lot, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Not, and I didn't have residuals either, which is kind of weird.
And I don't know how many of them do residuals anymore. It seems like lately, anything that I've heard, even I have a licensing guy who helps out some of this stuff, and he says the same thing. It's more like a flat fee. It's just like, we're going to pay you this much.
Right,
take
I know
it
like things
leave.
Like MTV, like I had songs on Road Rules mm-hmm. for that show, and they just were like, you know, hey, we're not going to pay you. You'll get your ASCAP, you know.
Oh, well,
money.
True. Yeah, yeah.
But,
and you get the exposure.
And then you're like, well, wait a minute, you should be. And they're like, dude, we can find somebody else to put the residual music of the guy looking out at the girl surfing. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, yeah. And that's there's so much music
take it or
out
leave it,
there
bro.
Now. Yeah, and everybody wants to do it. That's what I was worried about. Talking to Google, like, if I say no more, they'll be like, well, then we'll find the next band. And I guess part of me growing up, and even everybody's so quiet about what gets paid, and I get it. You don't like, and people don't like to talk about it.
But you didn't
get
like a mechanical, the ASCAP
money
from those commercials?
Not from
either?
That one, but I think that was just somehow all rolled in.
But the TV shows.
The TV show we did, yeah. Because we got it on a show on Cartoon Network, a different song on there. And that one was
$2,000
cool? $2,000 also.
You got a song on the cartoon. You watch it?
Yeah.
What was
well,
it?
It wasn't even a cartoon.
Tell me
it was weird.
SpongeBob SquarePants or something.
I wish. It wasn't even a cartoon. That's what's weird. That's why I say Cartoon Network, because it seems cooler than what it actually was. It was the only show that wasn't a cartoon on Cartoon Network. It was called Unnatural History, and it lasted a season. But they featured the song really awesome. Like, they played almost the entire song while this whole slow motion scene went on. Like, they thought it was really neat. So, and I know we still get, you know, album sales and downloads from like the Google ad, and from that particularly, people find us somehow based on those things.
So you had some successes. Did you have like label things? Did you guys in Built by Snow? Did you have any kind of
no labels?
Any kind of like excitement?
We did, I mean, it
did
was
you have some.
It was cool. We had, I mean, we had cool things happening, and maybe we could have pushed things sort of to the next level if we did the next album. But at that point, that was when my wife and I decided to have a kid. So we got pregnant, and then it was like, well, I needed to take a big break because I looked at the whole thing and was like, I'm not going to have time for late nights out playing music and practicing every night of the week and going on tours. And I've got a kid at home. Right. I need to focus on the kids. So I think if we would have pushed a little bit from right there, we were probably one of those bands where you're kind of like hitting that crest, like you got
critical point.
Yeah, you've got to push really hard
or back away.
And I backed away, and that was, and I'm not mad about it at all.
No, man, life gets
yeah, I had a lot of good years pushing with Built by Snow. We pushed for 4.5 years trying to get to that point, and then we did. And I still, you know, people still seem to like those songs and still find anything that we're doing right now after that. So I mean, it's pretty neat, I guess. We're still doing it, still making music, and that's what I wanted to do, is just have people hear it. So
all right, so then when did you make All Right, All Right, All Right, All Right, All Right?
That was going to be the next Built by Snow album. Okay. That's why it sounds very Built by Snow. It's like got the same kind of sound. I was already writing these songs, and I had just gotten Pro Tools, moved on from my Akai DPS 16, and got Pro Tools, started recording for real. And about that point, I had written maybe like half of that album, All Right, All Right, All Right, for Built by Snow. And then it just sort of fell apart with Built by Snow. One of our guys moved out of town, and then we'd all, while I took that break with the kid, everybody sort of went into a different band. And so we started back up for a little while, but it just wasn't working out. So we decided, all right, let's just take a big break now. And we took, in that big break, that was when our bass player moved away. And then I just decided, well, I can either take these songs and wait until Built by Snow might get back together at some point, or I can just give them a new name and release them as a different band. And I just decided I'll just release them as Oh Lookout and start something new, and it'll just be more of a bedroom project at that point. I'll just start recording and releasing. So I did that and released that album. And after about a year, or not even after about a year.
Because Oh Lookout is that... this is going to be so cheesy, but Oh Lookout.
Yeah. Exactly. No. That's really? Exactly it. Yeah, that's it. That's what it is. I'm a Beatles nerd, so yeah.
You got to meet my friend Darren, man.
Awesome.
Do you know Darren Murphy?
I know the name. Why do I know the name? Oh, Darren Murphy.
Blow your mind, man. We're in Skyrocket together.
Awesome.
He's the drummer, but he's a Beatle guy on a level that you might never even understand. This is the level.
Really?
There was a John Lennon musical in like 2005, right?
Yeah.
The director wanted Marshall Crenshaw for one of the things, and Marshall Crenshaw looks, you know, he's a pop guy. He was an 80s kind of pop guy, but he got his start in Beatlemania, which was like this late 70s, early Beatle, early 80s touring, you know, Beatle Broadway show.
Yeah,
they just play Beatles songs. They come out, you know, first
looked
with
like the
mop top,
yeah.
And then they come out like they smoked weed, and then they come out Sgt. Pepper, and then they all have beards or whatever.
Nice.
So, like a play in four acts or something, but just they come out and play a concert.
Nice, yeah.
So, whatever. Somehow Darren did a show with Marshall Crenshaw. Marshall Crenshaw's manager knew him. So, Marshall Crenshaw's manager, like, told the producers of this, one of them was Yoko Ono, but of this John Lennon Broadway play, Lennon, they said, hey, I mean, this is such a long story for this. I'm sorry.
No, that's all. I'm a Beatle nerd, so I could just
But I think you'll enjoy this.
Yeah.
Marshall Crenshaw's manager, you know, gets a hold of Darren. He's like, you got to get a hold of this guy because they're looking for this, I think. And so he wrote back the producers of the play and was like, hey, I've got a guy. He lives in Austin. Promise you, he's the guy.
Mm-hmm.
So they get Darren up there to audition. I think this is how the story goes, is that he auditions and it's like 9 different people playing John Lennon, like that Bob Dylan movie.
Uh-huh, yeah,
you know what
sure,
I mean? They even had like a lady playing him and stuff. So they were basically looking for the essence of John, but he was so John Lennon that like Yoko and the producer guy were like, man, you're just too, it's too much.
What?
We're not trying to actually do the guy. But Darren was the understudy for like all 9 parts.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, like he ended up being the guy that was going to bring up the rear. Sadly, the thing didn't last very long. I think it was one of the shorter Broadway shows ever.
Did he get to get on ever?
I think he did. He got to get on.
Nice.
Yeah.
Which one did he get on for? I'm just curious. Was he understudy hopping for?
He was understudy for everyone. So it was like one night somebody didn't make it. Maybe he went up a couple times.
Yeah.
A couple years ago, we drank the bottle of champagne from that show that
nice.
He was on. Yeah.
Nice.
So anyway, so there you go. He's so Bob, so John Lennon.
Even Yoko
couldn't hang.
Yeah, I gotta meet this guy. That's awesome. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm a Beatle geek, so that's Oh Look Out was just, yeah, coming.
That's awesome.
Picking a name from the Beatles, or picking something the Beatles said that I could stick in without being too obvious, you know? Can't call it I'm the Walrus guy or anything. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that, and I still don't write as much like the Beatles. So I'm thinking the next album I do, I finally got the balls to go, I'm going to write a Beatles-ish album. I'm going to do it. Like I've been so scared to try, because it's that's a lot to aim for, you know? I'm like, I just want to do what I do, and there'll be little Beatle parts that come out, but I get that
you're informed by them, though, you know, by hearing this stuff.
Awesome.
I mean, definitely a guy that heard it. I mean, I'm sure you can hear that. I mean, obviously, I know you can. You can hear it in mine, too.
Yeah, away. That's awesome. And I love that. And that's why I was like, I want to do more. Like, I want to aim for it a little bit more instead of, like, it'll show up in bits. Because like, that's what I like to talk about. And even a lot of my influences right now that people will be like, oh, so you're way into, you know, Devo, and you're way into, you know, stuff like that, and Weezer. I'm like, yeah, I mean, I was, and I still am. They're still going to be some of my favorite bands ever, but that really was what I was listening to a while back. I don't listen to that as much anymore.
What are you listening to? More the Beatles.
But I've always, it's just more geared. I've gotten away from more synth sounds and more of, I guess, more pianos and organs and stuff away from synths and more guitars. And instead of poppy, dancey, more just like, you know, straight ahead rock kind of stuff. So
do you listen to, you know, like other kind of Beatle bands like Badfinger and like...
A little bit.
And I've listened to Jellyfish.
I haven't listened to Jellyfish. Badfinger is one that I've kind of been getting into a little bit lately. The drummer who I played with, Oh Look Out, for the last year, is a huge Badfinger fan, so he was really pushing him on me, and it was like I knew that the Beatles had signed him to Apple, but I had never really dove deep into the catalog, and he started showing me, and I'm like, whoa,
yeah,
this is fucking good. All right, I gotta go in a little bit deeper. So.
Yeah, that's good stuff.
Yeah,
what about? I'm trying to think of other bands. You like bands like Red Cross?
I've never heard Red Cross.
Oh, they're cool.
Oh, they're cool. All right, I'm gonna have to look up Red Cross.
Cool rock and roll, like, you know, kind of pop rock and roll.
Nice,
kind of
bands. No, I'm a huge pop rock guy. Like,
so what?
All the way.
So your next thing is you're thinking about putting together a band. This record's released already, right?
It'll come out in 2 weeks.
Oh, it comes out
October 30th.
October 30th.
Yeah, that's the official release date. But I put it online already
I'm drawing a blank on the name.
Orchestrated Fuzz. Yeah, it'll be. It's actually online right now for like a pre-release thing. I just went ahead and put it up on Bandcamp where anybody can go buy it already. And
go listen to it.
Yeah, it's
too.
It's,
you can listen to it.
Yeah,
on,
listen to it.
Listen stream. To it on SoundCloud.
Mm-hmm, SoundCloud, and I put together a zine for it. I've gotten into drawing lately, so yeah, I drew a zine for it, and there's a scan of it online at olookout.com. You just click on the album Orchestrated Fuzz, and there's a zine, and, you know, I put it online,
bitchin',
to turn pages, and you can click on links. I made a really, really awesome video for it with all these 80s action figures, and you know, from like Rambo and He-Man and Mr. T, and I edited it so that each one of these action figures are singing the words. And
how did you do that?
I'm a technical director. This is the first time I've actually ever edited anything myself outside of work, though. So I went out and bought a VHS camera like I used to have. I shot it all on VHS. Yeah. I edited it with me singing all the words and put the mouths in for all the characters, and it looks pretty awesome. I put every line is sung by a different character, like standing up, and then I blew some of them up with firecrackers while I was taping. And
that's awesome.
It's a rad video, I think, and I just put
I'm
that
sorry
out.
I didn't watch it. I'm gonna watch that.
You should totally. It's a really good video.
So it's olookout.com.
Yeah, go to olookout.com, and if there you'll see videos like that. And I just finished another video which I'm about to put out, and it's all animated 8-bit style. I created this whole character running along and turning into a wolf.
8-bits bad? What is that?
Like
lo-fi?
Oh, like 8-bits, like a Nintendo style. It looks like a Nintendo game. Like, it's a straight up Nintendo
game. Do you
do
that for other people?
This is the first time I've done it. I've made 2 videos now, both for this album, and I'm just realizing I can do this.
You could do this?
Yeah, I think I could.
Would you charge a lot of money to someone?
No, I'd do it pretty cheap. So, I mean, no. I mean, people talk to me. Already somebody asked me just... Saw the first one and went, badass, can you make a video?
Yeah.
Well, talk to me,
did
maybe.
Did you ever see that there was a video, what's her name? Men at Work?
Yeah.
Had a video for a song called It's a Mistake.
what was the video?
All these 80s I remember Men figures, at Work. Like little G.I. Joe guys.
Oh, really? I kind of want. No, I didn't ever see the video.
Stop motion. They're not singing or anything, but they're like.
But they know, all do it stop motion. Yeah, it. Awesome. Yeah. I made some stop motion GIFs like to promote the album. Like, Mr. T banging on a keyboard and like Rambo punching a cassette tape 4-track. You know, these like looped animated GIFs. Trying to get into all aspects of the creativity
here.
Yeah,
I love this. So, what else are you doing?
That and drawing, like I said, made the zine.
Is there a program you can make a zine with? I want to do that.
I just put it all together myself. I've been drawing during the whole recording of the album. I started drawing all these weird pictures and stuff. So okay. I drew them up and then scanned them in and then put it online so it looks like it's a zine sitting on a old wooden table, and you click the pages to turn it. And then I've just gotten into building web stuff too. So
that's
built that,
kick ass, man.
And made the videos. And then there's something else I was doing recently. I can't even.
Yeah,
remember.
I stay
pretty busy lately. Every day I'm trying to do something else a little bit more, like in the
creative.
Yeah,
yeah, it's cool. I mean, it's kind of like what you got to do, and the thing is the resources are cheap, you know.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah,
you don't
exactly.
have to buy any equipment or anything.
Yeah,
you buy some programs as long as you got the
buy yeah. quotes quote, unquote. Quote some programs.
See, I'm not a computer savvy guy.
It's pretty easy. Okay. I'm more like if anybody hears this, they'll know. But man, you can torrent programs like so easy now. You just go online and search what you're looking for and download it, and they have all the keys and all that, the cracks and stuff. So. Pretty easy. You get into it. I mean, you obviously do the same kind of stuff that I do, all the home recording stuff. You'd probably
But I mean, like in 2001 I put out a record. I was in this band called Gowdy,
and
I put out a zine.
Oh sweet.
To you go did, along yeah. with the record, but it wasn't it was just called Mustache, and it was just a series of drawings I made while Mark Addison was mixing our record, and I had to be quiet. So I would just draw different people with mustaches and stick figure bodies.
Nice, yeah.
Yeah.
That's
I
awesome.
Sold that at the shows.
Nice, yeah. And that's just an extra thing that, you know, people get into you with and you can sell and whatever you got to do. That's like, I'm just giving them away and anybody online can see him. And...
What's the name of the actor you look like?
It's Cameron from Ferris Bueller's Day
Off.
No. That's the one that most people say.
The guy from the show where he decides to become a private investigator. And he's in Rushmore. You know what I'm talking about.
Oh, you think I look like that guy. Schwartzman. Jason Schwartzman. Oh, awesome. No, I didn't got that one
he
before.
He makes his own records, solo records in his house.
Is he making records now? I know he was with Phantom Planet for a while.
He's been making records for a while under the name Coconut Records.
Sweet. I didn't know that.
Great records.
Really?
You love them. Yeah. They're exactly the kind of thing you're looking for.
Coconut Records.
That's the name of his band.
I'm going to go check that out.
Yeah.
I didn't even know he did it. I knew that he played with Phantom Planet, and then they said he made the decision to be an actor instead of touring all the time, and then I hadn't heard anything
since. So he does these records at his house. It's him playing everything. They sound like what you want to hear.
Oh, man. I'm going to love it then.
Yeah, you're gonna
love it. So, I'm so into all the like the home-recorded stuff lately, especially, too. Like,
that's what his are.
Nice.
And they're great.
Nice.
So your record... Okay, so Orchestrated Fuzz comes out on... Officially. October 20th. Like it'll be on iTunes and all that stuff.
Yeah, iTunes and Amazon.
You can go to Bandcamp and get it now.
Yep, Bandcamp.
You can go listen to it, stream it on Bandcamp.
Yeah, stream it on Bandcamp.
And on SoundCloud.
Yeah, SoundCloud. Right. And then there's videos on olookout.com, a zine on olookout.com. Oh, I'm making some shirts now too.
Do you have the shirts done?
No, I'm starting them now. I'm going to hand draw them. They're all going to be hand-drawn shirts. I've got some fabric markers, so they'll all be like simple, kind of silly. Different items on shirts with a lookout written next to them, so it's just cheaper
awesome.
For me to do. But then everybody's getting sort of their own custom shirt. You know, it's everyone's a little bit different.
I will wear one of those shirts.
Sweet, yeah, I'll send you a shirt.
Are you going to play a show? Are you going to have a show?
Yeah, probably by the new year, because I'm thinking my next son will be born in about a month, and I'll need a few months to just sort of be a dad. And you know, he's not going to sleep very easily, so. Normally, he's going to just sleep every 2 hours. I know that.
So you're just going to put this out and...
Initially. And then what my goal is to do... I'm going to try this. I haven't even done it yet, but I'm going to try a kick drum, guitar, keyboard, and then a boombox behind me that'll be just playing out some keyboard parts so that I can play along. So I'll guitar it, and then the sampled stuff will be behind me, and then I'll just kick drum along. I'm going to try that and see how it goes, because that'll be the easiest thing for me to do, because I don't really have to practice with people at that point. I can just practice at home while my kid's there instead of having to go late night practices. Yeah.
It's practical.
So I think
you can also probably go out on the road a little bit like that if you need to.
It seems the easiest way to do it right now. So if I can get it to sound good, then I'm gonna do that. And then from there, we'll see how it goes later in the year if I decide to get some more people on board and start playing some more shows again. Because we played a handful last year with some really good bands. We played with The Impossibles, and we played with Quiet Company and Speak.
Yeah, I saw that.
Dynamite Hack and Shotzi, a bunch of cool bands. It was pretty fun.
Wow. Dynamite Hack and Shotzi, that's like a blast from the past.
Isn't that crazy? It was the same show. Yeah, that one just popped in my head.
Are they really playing? Did they just do like a reunion?
I think it was just a one-off. And I talked to the guy from Shotzi a lot afterwards. He's a really nice guy. I'd never met him before.
The singer guy, glasses?
Yeah, the glasses.
They're kind of Weezer-y.
Yeah, super Weezer-y. And he said he was thinking about doing some more, but I haven't heard from him since. So it more just seemed like a one-off.
Right.
But the guys from Dynamite Hack were super nice too, and they were in touch and really good guys. I need to send that guy the album. He was asking about it. He's pretty cool.
Do you have physical copies of the album? Do you have one with you?
Not one with me, but I can get you one. I can get you a shirt if you want one of those. I'll probably
all that stuff.
I'll probably be selling pretty soon the package deals with like a shirt and a handmade CD with the zine that I'll be packaging out, sending out. Maybe some collector buttons. I don't know. I feel like if you put the word collector in front of something, it makes it a little bit cooler. Some collector shirts.
Yeah,
some
collector shirts.
Buttons.
Signed and numbered. Like limited edition. Yeah, exactly. All those things that we try to use.
Yeah, exactly. Collector limited edition t-shirts and buttons and zines. Hand numbered. Autographed by the artist.
Oh, look out.
Yeah. I thought, can't go wrong, you know. They got John Lennon saying it. I know David Bowie said it before. Oh, look out, you rock and rollers.
Oh, yeah.
So...
A lot of people say it.
Oh, look out. I'm like, I'll take it.
You know, the guy I was driving back from Houston with said it to me yesterday when I was trying to find something on the iPod and I was drifting into the other lane.
Oh, look out.
I think he said it in the Beatle voice.
Nice. Oh, look out. Here she comes.
You need to get a sampler so you can keep on.
Oh, look out. Here she comes.
Oh, yeah.
She came in through the bathroom. And then he says it in Helter Skelter,
Helter Skelter, yeah, that's the one.
That's the one you're thinking, yeah. I was thinking the oh look out. Yeah, I think they say it three times. There's one more somewhere. I can't remember where though. There's look out.
Well, that's Darren. Out. I gotta hook you up with Darren.
Yeah, I gotta meet this guy.
And you should definitely meet the John Lennon band guys.
Yeah.
The Number 9 Orchestra.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Go play with them next year on his birthday.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was looking for people. They didn't really have that many people.
Really?
Yeah. You'd think there used to be a lot more back, you know, they've been doing it since like the like 1991.
Wow.
Yeah.
It would probably be a pretty kick-ass show too, huh?
It's great, man. They have people from the symphony playing this stuff. And the guys are like the same guys been playing forever.
I wish I could have seen it.
You know Stephen Doster?
No.
He's great. He's a Beatle guy too. He has a studio here in town.
Oh, what's the studio?
It's that studio with the guy from Moonlight Tower.
Uh-huh.
Moonlight Towers.
Yeah, yeah.
Over here on the east side. I can't remember what it's called. Maybe East Side Recording.
Maybe that's it. Yeah.
East Side. What's your last name, JP?
It's Furtner.
Furtner?
Yeah. It's a little German Czech.
Yeah.
Furtner. I think it means horse trainer in German.
Oh, good.
Yeah. Furtner. Furtner.
Furtner.
But it's so hard to say. That's why I was like, well, I need a name like for a band instead of just JP Furtner. Like,
yeah.
What? JP Furtner. PH? No, it's PFER. Okay. All right. The band is Oh, Look Out.
That's great.
It's not JP Furtner.
Well, Orchestrated Fuzz. People get it. Olookout.com.
Do it.
JP Furtner.
Mm-hmm.
My new friend.
Yep.
Kindred Spirits. Yep. We are. My friend.
We are. I'm going to bring you a limited edition t-shirt.
I'm going to give you two CDs.
Oh, yeah. And I got to look up. I forgot the name already. Jason Schwartzman.
You're going to love it.
Deal.
All right. Thanks, man.
Thank you.
Right. I want to thank JP for coming by, man. He's a great guy. How about that? You like Oh Lookout? Get their record, Orchestrated Fuzz. It's out there. You can find it. Just look them up. Oh Lookout. All right, you guys, you know what to do. Subscribe to us on iTunes. Follow me on Twitter. Like our Facebook page, How Did I Get Here? And send us some information about yourself. Or information. Just tell us hi every once in a while, you know? Drop us a line. Let us know how we're doing. That's what we want to know. And since it's just me doing this stuff, me referring to myself as we means I'm tired and I should probably go. Here's a little bit more Oh Lookout from their album, Orchestrated Fuzz. You guys rock on. Let's get down.